Safely Home, written by Randy Alcorn. This audio version is published by Oasis Audio through an agreement with Tyndale House Publishers. Safely Home is read by Steve Seaver.
Safely Home by Randy Alcorn. Narrated by Steve Seaver. Three men watched intently as peculiar events occurred, one right after the other, on opposite sides of the globe.
"What's happening?"
asked the first, tall and dark-skinned.
"I don't know,"
replied the man with long black hair.
"But wheels are turning, aren't they?"
"A pattern is emerging," said the third man, compact and broad-shouldered. "Something great seems poised to happen. Something else lurks in the shadows."
"Two destinies are converging, but neither suspects it."
The tall one pointed toward a great palace in the distance.
"He searches to find the right man for the right hour. Is this the hour? Is this the man? And if so, which man?"
"The soil was tilled and the seeds planted 20 years ago," the broad-shouldered man said. "No, 100 years at least. Now we will see what fruit the vine produces, or whether it will wither and die."
"Hanging in the balance are not just two men,"
said the long-haired man,
"but two families, perhaps two nations. Indeed, two worlds."
The tall man reached out one hand to the other two, who grasped it firmly. The muscles of their forearms taut. They looked like warriors.
"The stakes are high. Higher than they can imagine. Higher than we ever dreamed when we walked that world."
"Somebody's got to make the tough calls," Ben Fielding muttered. "And I don't see anyone else volunteering."
He picked up the phone from his oversized mahogany desk at the far side of his window office on the 39th floor of the U.S. Bancorp Tower. It was a bright September morning, and Oregon was the best place in the world to live in the fall. But he had more important things to do than admire the view. "Doug, we need to talk."
"Sure,"
said Doug Roberts from his desk in the sales department.
"What's up?"
"I have a management team meeting right now. Might take an hour. I'll call you in when it's over. Be sure you're available. I've got a conference call before lunch and I won't have much time."
"Okay, Ben, but what do you want to talk about?"
"I'll call you when I'm ready." Ben still gripped the phone tightly 3 seconds after he had finished talking. Finally, he put it down. Doug was his cousin, his mom's sister's son. They'd grown up on the East Coast, a few hundred miles apart. They'd spent most holidays together, wrestling in the snow or exploring the beach or playing Parcheesi in front of the fire. Now they both worked in Portland, Oregon for Getz International, a leading-edge multinational corporation. As a department head 15 years ago, Ben had offered Doug a sales job, and he had jumped at it. Doug had so much potential. Why had he forced his hand? Once he'd been an asset to Ben. Now he'd become a liability. That Doug was family made it messy. Ben would probably have to skip the holiday gatherings this year.
"Martin's in the boardroom."
His secretary's voice over the intercom yanked Ben back to the moment.
"They're ready for you."
"On my way." At the door of the conference room, Ben took a deep breath, calculating his entrance. He walked in briskly, but not too hurried. He stood tall and smiled pleasantly without grinning. Dressed in a black Armani suit with a boxy Italian fit, Ben Fielding was a self-made picture of style, poise, and competence. There were 8 men in the room, and every eye was on him.
"Hey, Ben," Martin said. "We're talking about that dream you spelled out for us 10 years ago, selling one of everything to a country of 1.2 billion people."
Suddenly, Martin's broad smile evaporated.
"Travis here has voiced some concerns."
Ben raised his eyebrows.
"The situation's not stable," Travis said. "I don't trust that government."
"China won't be bullied by anyone," Ben said. "I'll say it again. If one nation dictates everybody's future, it won't be America. It'll be China.
The sooner everybody comes to terms with that, the better we can position ourselves.
One thing's for sure, Martin said. There's not another semiconductor or microchip company with our access to Beijing and Shanghai. Between Ben and Jeffrey, we've established one major beachhead.
Martin Goetz, showing straight white teeth and a smile so big it drew in everyone, was CEO of Goetz International. His father had started the company in 1979, just before the computer revolution changed the world.
Okay, guys. What's the report on the Shanghai factory?
All indicators are positive, Jeffrey said. Production's still going up. With socialism loosening its grip and workers getting more for their labor, there's a new Chinese work ethic. Without all those paranoid safety and anti-pollution regulations, they get done in a week what takes us a month.
I don't want to hear this,
Johnny said, playfully covering his ears.
There are certain things lawyers shouldn't know.
We can't impose American standards on them, Ben said. It was a mantra he had repeated at many team meetings. And even if we could, we don't have the right. But we can demand the highest product standards. And we're getting great results. These people are bright, smart, eager to work. They don't know about unions. They're just grateful to make a living and be able to buy a refrigerator, a TV, maybe even a computer. Ben's confident voice commanded attention. There was a presence about him. Martin was the boss, but Ben was the brains and energy. Everyone knew it.
China's still our fastest growing market?
Martin asked. In another few years, they'll be our biggest customer, period, Ben said.
I wish I shared your confidence, Travis said. Seems to me we're walking in a minefield. It's a shaky economy, human rights issues, overbuilding in Shanghai, not to mention Beijing's ability to pull the plug on anyone for any reason.
It's capitalists and communists scratching each other's backs, Ben said. Sure, they've got problems, but they're learning fast. I've been saying it since my first trip to Beijing. China's our future, guys. It offers us the most cost-effective partnerships on the planet, and it's a dream market come true. Martin looked at Ben with undisguised admiration.
10 years ago, when you told us you could bring in millions of dollars if you studied Mandarin on company time, I thought you'd gone crazy. But it worked. Boy, did it work. They trust us. You and Jeffrey especially. You speak their language, know their culture. That's our edge.
Martin stood up.
And I want to shore up that edge. I've been chewing on an idea since that Fortune 500 CEO think tank I attended in Chicago a couple of months ago.
Martin looked around the room the way he always did before announcing an idea he was particularly proud of.
I'd like to send Ben to spend maybe 6 weeks living among and talking with typical Chinese citizens, the type that might work in our factories and buy our products. Ben, what about that old college roommate of yours? He lives in China, right? A professor, isn't he?
Ben nodded. Li Chuan's youthful face invaded his mind and infused it with bittersweet memories. It was just like Martin to spring this on him with everybody watching.
Getting inside the mind of the typical consumer would help our sales strategy, and it would be great PR on both sides of the ocean. We'd be the company that sent a Mandarin-speaking VP to live with Chinese nationals, to see what they're like, to learn what they need. It's the we care about the common man angle, a big image booster for Goetz.
The other members of the management team looked at each other, then at Ben. He hesitated. But when Martin felt this strongly about an idea, it nearly always happened. You might as well go with him and look brilliant and loyal.
Anyway, more on that later, Martin said. Let's hit the agenda. Our third quarter profits are going to blow them away. When this hits Wall Street, things are going to fly.
An hour later, Ben walked out of the conference room, glad-handing his associates. As he came out the door, he saw Doug Roberts standing by a photocopy machine. His stomach churned. He looked at his watch.
Conference call in 6 minutes.
Doug, he called. Meeting will have to wait until Monday morning. My office, 7:30.
Sure, but what are we going to do?
7:30 Monday, my office. I've got a conference call. Ben strode past his secretary, Jen, and into his office. He shut the door behind him and flopped down on the plush visitor's couch. Until their lives took different turns, Doug had been not only family, but a close friend. Ben knew he couldn't afford to think of him that way anymore. And if Doug still considered Ben a friend, well, he wouldn't much longer.